Welcome to another episode of Copa with Felipe Cardenas. I'm your host, and my guest today is Daniel Edwards. He is an Argentina-based football reporter and writer. Been wanting to get you on the show for a while now, Daniel. How are you, and welcome.
Hey there, Felipe. How you doing? Pleasure to be on as well.
Of course. You know, you're the right guy and at the right time, because I do want to talk plenty about Thiago Almada. I know the fans here in Atlanta are intrigued by what his future may be beyond Atlanta, what his future may be at the international level as well. But let's just start with the most recent. He makes his debut. He gets into the squad for the September camp, gets on the field against Honduras. It's his first senior cap. And he really did play well, too. Like, he looked pretty good in those flashes. He looked like he understood how to play with Lionel Messi. What were your takeaways from that match against Honduras from Thiago Almada's perspective?
I think it was great. It really did come out of nowhere. I mean, at least for me, I've been on holiday recently in the UK and Europe, so I haven't been paying as much attention as I usually do to the comings and goings of the Argentina squad. So they got him in as kind of a surprise call-up because he hasn't been particularly close before. And you might have thought, Thiago Almada, he's come in to spend some time with Messi, spend some time with his team, see how it works. Maybe he won't see that much action. But if he does, it's going to be interesting to see what he can do. And he came in just after half time and he was really fantastic. I mean, he's a guy that obviously I saw a lot when he was still in Argentina with Vélez, where he really looked impressive. Of course, that's why Atlanta turned their eyes on him. Haven't seen him, obviously, as much since he moved up to Major League Soccer. But he just looks such a different player, like that talent, all the ability, the technique on the ball is still there, probably even better. But it looks like now he's learned as well to integrate a bit more with the team. He's always looking for that pass. And I think how he linked up, as you say, with Messi on the pitch and with Julian Alvarez, these guys in, let's be honest, it was almost an exhibition Argentina team in that second half because they're already 2-0 up against an Honduras team, which was pretty demoralised, didn't really know what to do after Argentina took them to pieces in the first half. And it was really exhibition stuff. They had something like 4 or 5 number 10s on the pitch, including Thiago. And just played this Harlem Globetrotters kind of football, knocking it around, pulling out the nutmegs, the flicks, but also being effective. And yeah. I mean, as an introduction to international football, all Thiago could really want more was the goal, because other than that, it was absolutely perfect, his cameo.
So it became a bit of a debate because obviously, Lionel Scaloni, Argentina's manager, who just was announced last night after their victory against Jamaica, he's been extended through to the 2026 World Cup. Just a massive bit of news there. I know they've been working on that for a while, but I think what came out of the game against Honduras on Thiago Almada is, okay, does he have a legitimate chance to make the final World Cup roster and be in Qatar? Just from reading and watching some of these debate shows in Argentina, obviously everyone understands his quality, but I did see some comments about like, what was the point of taking him at this point? Like, does a 21-year-old that doesn't have any international experience really, is he going to make a difference at a World Cup? What do you think? Like, what is your gut telling you? Was it more of just like, hey, let's get him into the system, get him into the program, let him know what it's like at this level? Or does Lionel Scaloni perhaps think about taking a player of his skill set to Qatar?
It's going to be tough for Almada because, as you say, he's young. He's only just made his debut 2 months before the World Cup. And he's also in a position where Argentina really are blessed for talent. That kind of creative attacking player. Obviously, Messi is the guy who's going to be starting all 7 games in Qatar, injury or suspension forbidden. And behind him, you've also got guys like Paulo Dybala, who didn't really see much, who didn't see much action this September. But if he gets in good shape and he starts impressing with Roma, you've got to think he's there too, because he's been there, he's been around for quite a while now. Also, when you're talking about attackers, you've got guys like Lautaro Martinez, Julian Alvarez, who's just come on the scene, Ángel Correa, who's always been a very useful utility player for Argentina up front, Joaquin Correa, Nicolas Gonzalez. it's a position where they're stacked, to put it short. Definitely, I think if Thiago did push his way in, it would be a wild card pick and something, you know, you could say Argentina are tied in the last few minutes. They need just a hint of inspiration. And from what we saw against Honduras and what we've seen in his career so far, he's a guy who could do that. And, you know, I don't want to go crazy with the parallels, but it's got something along the lines of Messi himself back in 2006, almost. Obviously, Messi being at Barcelona, just broken through, probably had a little bit more of a name than Thiago, but kind of unknown quantity could be useful. I think, all told, he's probably unlikely to make the final cut, but definitely, if he doesn't make it, looking through to 2024 and definitely 2026, these kind of scary, presumably post-Messi days, he's a guy who really should be there.
What makes him special? And I guess go back to when he was sort of, you know, he was deemed the La Joya, the jewel of the Vélez Sarsfield Academy. Gabriel Heinze gives him his debut at 17. You know, what have you seen? What did you see from him at the time? And you mentioned already, like, you did see a different player that came on against Honduras. You know, where do you see the growth with Thiago Amado? What makes him special and how has he developed so far in your eyes?
Well, he's just got that classic Argentine number 10 profile, hasn't he? He's short, stocky, keeps his head, his center of gravity very low. It's so hard to get the ball off him when he gets going. And these are players you always like to see because, you know, you get them, they get them possession and they can do almost anything. Almada Favela's really stood out with his technique on the ball, as I've said, his dribbling. Anywhere in the final third, he was dangerous because he just cut a path to goal, and he's also got a brilliant strike on him.
He does.
On 5 feet, he's very useful. But probably what we saw at Vélez, I mean, it's so hard for these kids who come in at 17, 18, even at a club like Vélez, who, you know, don't have the same kind of pressure and exposure that, say, maybe a Boca or a River would do. But still, you know, he made such a brilliant introduction. He was expected to just sustain it, you know, get the massive move at 19 to, I don't know, Barcelona, Real Madrid, the clubs that always come up when these guys start playing five or six good games. And it's tough. I think he kept up a decent level, but perhaps he was trying to do too much when he was still a kid at Vélez, and that kind of hurt him when it came to being a part of a team, especially since Vélez at that time probably weren't at their best, so he kind of felt as well he had to take it all on, and it was probably counterproductive. What I saw yesterday was a player who, as I said, has still got all of the skill in the world, can just do anything on the ball, but now his first instinct is to look for that teammate, to look for that pass and see, right, maybe I can, you know, advance the play on my own, but if not, who's there to link up with me, you know, looking for a 1-2 or just looking into the box. And that's something he did really well, as I said, against, you know, not great opposition, but it's encouraging. Yeah. You'll obviously know better than me if this was a flash in the pan or if this is something that he's been doing regularly for Atlanta too. But definitely from what I saw against Honduras, it's been really encouraging how he's come on.
I mean, he had a bit of a slow start here in Atlanta. I do want to ask you if that was the right move for him, but since you asked, I mean, it took him a bit to get into the side. You know, I remember I was one of the reporters that was like, just put him in the game, like let him play. You know, Gonzalo Pineda, the manager here in Atlanta United, wanted to give him some time, wanted to manage his minutes and not put too much on him. And I guess an interesting parallel is that Atlanta United is no longer at their best either. You know, you mentioned Vélez when he was there, they were struggling inside. Atlanta United is bottom of the table right now, really fighting to get back into the playoffs. Yeah. They have a slight chance to do so. And thanks to him, like, he has come on of late. I believe he has 6 goals, 11 assists, you know, just 3 assists off of Miguel Almiron's club record of 14. So the impact has been there, and it grew gradually throughout the season. You mentioned it, you know, he perhaps took on too much at Vélez. Here in Atlanta, I really do believe that he has been given too much of, and I don't mean in a negative way, but just, you know, he's playing in a bit of a deeper role in midfield. He's coming to get the ball. He's breaking pressure. He's progressing. He's playing as a number 10 at times. He's moving out wide. He's on both flanks. I mean, he's doing a lot on a team that needs that sort of quality. When he came on against Argentina, like you mentioned, you know, he didn't come back to midfield at all. He didn't have to. You know, they had, like you mentioned, like, you know, four number 10s just controlling possession, controlling the ball, and he could just come and get his touch and stay focused on getting to goal. So perhaps the challenge of maintaining his skill set on a weaker side like Atlanta is helping his development. It is an interesting wrinkle. You know, do you think, you mentioned that the big sides, you know, I've read Manchester United had eyes on Thiago Almada at one point. Obviously, Olympique Marseille like was really serious about a signing. Atlanta United comes in and drops $60 million. Vélez can't say no. Do you believe that was the right move for him, though?
It's an interesting one because this MLS pipeline, let's say from South America to Europe, is something that really began with Almiron. And we thought, you know, at that time he would be the first of many, right, to go from Argentina or from other South American countries, really make a name for himself and then make the logical onward move to the Premier League or one of the top five European leagues. And I think it hasn't quite happened yet, at least from what I've been seeing. Almiron was what, three years ago? He's left Atlanta now?
Yeah, I mean, he left in 2019.
3 years. Yep. And there haven't been too many examples since of people following him.
Correct.
Obviously, just sticking to Atlanta, you had Ezequiel Barco, who looked a very similar player in terms of potential and didn't quite happen for him. And now he's come back to Argentina, playing back in River. Guys like Gonzalo Martinez, Piti Martinez. I don't think there's any guarantees, but no. If he keeps shining in MLS, he's definitely going to be in the spotlight for a move, because I saw recently a figure where I think it was for the first time MLS outgoings to Europe are now either rivaling or even outstripping those that come from Brazil and Argentina. It's a market which European teams are looking at and they're using a lot. So definitely if he keeps up this form, if what you said, you know, carries on and he keeps getting these goals and keeps getting these assists, it's going to be hard for him because he's a guy, you know, all of the virtues I mentioned, you know, the short stature, light center of gravity, they look brilliant, but we know it's not always a profile that works out best in Europe. Messi made it because he's Messi.
Yeah.
And he's just the best player in the world. That's the kind of bar Thiago has to be aiming for, unfortunately, to kind of make it in a big European team, because otherwise for guys of his size, his stature is tough. Let's not kid ourselves. But let's see him get the chance. If he keeps doing well in Atlanta and the sides, you know, come in for him, I'd love to see him have a chance at a team, you know, in England or Italy, Spain. I think he's got every chance of making a go of it.
It's a matter of time, in my opinion, just because the way he has come on in this late stage of the season, right before World Cup, even if he doesn't go to Qatar, which I agree, I don't think he's going to make it. I think Scaloni's going to focus those three additional positions that coaches are given. Now it's a 26-man roster, not a 23-man roster. I think he's going to really prioritize those in other parts of the field. But again, just the fact that Thiago Almada is beginning to show the quality that everyone knew he had, I think this isn't a surprise that he's this quality and this good of a player. I just think it was a matter of time before he put it together. And I do truly believe it's a matter of time before he makes a big, big move to Europe. Will it be, I was asked recently, will it be the close to $30 million move that Almiron made to Newcastle United? You know, perhaps he's already a $60 million player. They're going to want to get plenty more than what they paid for here in Atlanta. You mentioned England, you mentioned Italy and La Liga in Spain. Of those three, and considering his skill set and where perhaps he can really impact the game, do any of those leagues stand out as a better destination for him?
I mean, the obvious answer would be Spain, because you got the shared culture, the shared language. It's always a lot easier for South American players to get a get a foothold when they go to La Liga. So that would probably be the most logical destination at the moment. I think the league itself perhaps favours his play a little bit. Maybe it's not quite as physical, quite as hectic as at least the Premier League, and it kind of, and creative players have a bit more scope to,
yep,
to show off their talents. But I think any of those leagues, plus of course France and Germany, any of the top five leagues would be a good destination for him. And let's not forget as well, you know, the guy's only 21. He's recently turned 21.
Young.
He's
just so got, young.
You know, we talk about him like he's been around for years. I mean, it says he has, but he's got his entire career ahead of him. It's really exciting.
So this is sort of a random anecdote, but I was at a sort of like a trendy taco place here in Atlanta once, and I ran into a friend, a former colleague of mine. He's from Argentina. I played, you know, local leagues here with him, and he was with a couple of his colleagues from Argentina here in Atlanta, and they'd just come back from an Atlanta United game. They saw Thiago Mata, and I asked them, you know, what were your thoughts? And these two Argentines, probably in their mid-20s, they almost simultaneously said, you know, he's so good. You guys are going to see. He's so good. What is the how is he perceived in Argentina? Like both, you know, as a player, as a playmaker, and off the field too. What is his personality like, and what is it perceived in Argentina?
I'd say it's a little bit of an unknown quantity, at least outside of Vélez, because as I mentioned earlier, the local press here is so focused towards River and Boca, and so if a prospect comes up from either of those clubs, you know, we know their shoe size, we know their favorite breakfast, we know who they're dating, who they used to date, who they're going to date. and it's really, you know, exhaustive. And once you get outside that bubble and perhaps outside of a couple of other clubs, you know, the likes of Racing or Independiente, San Lorenzo, the other, you know, self-denominated grandes, the coverage isn't quite as oppressive. So a guy like Almada, and other people, you know, who come through the clubs like Vélez or Banfield or Lanús, they can fly under the radar a little more. Almada has obviously had a lot of coverage just for what he does on the pitch. You know, being so impressive for Vélez as a youngster, and also being under a renowned coach like Gabriel Ainsa, definitely helped him get his name out there a little bit more. But I think, yeah, he wasn't a player probably who was on the tongue of everyone in Argentina, and probably that's why his introduction on Friday came as a bit of a surprise, because, you know, that it was a youngster who did well in Vélez and went up to the States and kind of fell off a lot of people's radars. And then you see him in this game where you probably weren't expecting, yep, to see him at all. And it was like, oh, fantastic. He's been brilliant. so I hope for his sake, he can stay out of the press and stay out of that media spotlight, because it can get very suffocating. So if he's not dealing with all that now, brilliant. All power to him.
The issues he had legally, he had some legal issues. He was part of a sexual abuse case that he was later not charged for. He was essentially cleared. I had a big conversation with Atlanta United's front office about that and how they vetted that, and every legal avenue that they took in order to secure that signing at the time. Did that hurt his image at all in Argentina, or to your point about not being a Boca or River player, was it not as magnified as perhaps it was here in the States when he was on the verge of signing?
No, it wasn't as magnified. And sadly, Argentina does have this problem. Kind of even at the big clubs, Boca, you know, for example, at the moment have been going through a very similar thing with Sebastián Villa.
Yep.
Which and I'm Pavon sure you're aware of. And Pavon, yeah, before that, I think, who was the other one? Eduardo Salvio.
Right.
There's been a string of really unsavory incidents, and kind of the decision Boca have made is that since Villa was all on the pitch, we'll keep him there, which I found, you know, deplorable, and it's been going on for almost 6 months now.
Yep.
So it's something that Argentine football definitely has to work on. I can't say, obviously, as I'm familiar with all of the intricacies in the and the details of the Amala case, but I did know that these allegations did come up and the case was subsequently dropped. I assume that Atlanta would have done their homework very thoroughly before signing him, because that's something, you know, obviously that going from Argentina to the States is a huge issue. But speaking, yeah, in general terms, it aside from kind of some kind of very tepid messages on the subject, it's something that really needs to be dealt with a lot more seriously, I think, and not kind of has a criteria, you know, this guy's playing badly and, you know, and he's being accused of something, let's drop him. But this guy's playing well, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. That's not how it works, is it?
Yeah, it's been really interesting because, and just we're going to move on to Argentina now, but you mentioned it, you know, how he surprised a lot of people. He's on the pitch. He looks like a young player on this team that is just so together. You know every single player on this Argentina national team, what they do, how they do it, what they're good at. And it was an interesting dynamic because here in MLS, Thiago Motta is like one of the stars of the league now. He's one of the young stars. He was recently rated the number 2 under 22 player in the league. But for Argentina, he was like just a youngster, just this young player who's like getting time in a friendly and is going to show a lot of promise.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Speaking of promise, this Argentina national team, Daniel, I mean, it's, you know, I know they played in World Cup final in 2014. They're always a contender, but it is an interesting turn of events for a side that were essentially losers in the country, you know, getting to two consecutive Copa America finals, losing them both in 2015 and 2016, not being able to, you know, really earn that respect that is so wanted at the international level in Argentina. From there, they finally win the Copa America. And now it's like they're heroes. They're like cult heroes. They're superstars in the country. How have you viewed that transition for the Argentina national team from going to that tough place of not being able to lift titles? Now they've done so. And now it's like they're the Beatles all over again.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Almost despite myself, it's... It's been really fun to watch these past 3 years. This, you know, young team just coming together and you know, the arm of Lionel Messi, one of the few veterans who's stuck around after those repeated failures, and then the absolute catastrophe, which was the 2018 World Cup. And I think that, you know, that's a good place to start, because Russia really did signal kind of the end of an era for Argentina. These guys like Javier Mascherano, like Gonzalo Higuain, like Sergio Agüero.
Rodriguez was still around at the time, was it? Was Maxi Rodriguez part?
That was 2014.
Okay.
Gone. But there was a couple of others, Enzo Perez, Lucas Bilia, some of these guys, you know, being around the setup for a long time. And in the case of, you know, Higuain, Mascherano, Agüero, although obviously Agüero played on for a little bit longer, guys who, you know, were absolute cornerstones of the team as they went so close and yet came up short so many times. So Russia happens. In the end, you know, they had a very flattering defeat against France, which could have been, you know, a lot heavier on the day. I think they were quite lucky to finish within one goal of a very entertaining game in the end. Sampaoli was fired, which was almost a foregone conclusion. He he's a coach I've always rated, and I thought it was the right decision to hire him, but it didn't quite come together for him in the international setup. And then they turned to this guy, Lionel Scaloni, complete unknown as a coach. There's a famous anecdote now in Argentina that he got his start with Sevilla and Sampdoria because his dad's a neighbor of his in Casilda, this town in Santa Fe province.
Interesting.
And his dad essentially took it upon himself to gatecrash an asado, which Sampdoria was hosting in his house, and asked him if he could give Lionel a job. Sampdoria said, "Yeah, all right." So he came along with Sampdoria to, you know, as part of his backroom team in Sevilla. I don't know if he even had a title. Went along to Argentina as well, again, almost without a title, just one of those, you know, the dudes who were there in the background, and ended up with the Argentina job almost by default. Had a decent run at under 20 level almost at the same time, but it was really inauspicious. And at the start, you know, it looked like a definite step back because it was a team that didn't really know how to play.
Yeah.
They weren't doing anything together. The 2009 Copa America, even though they got to the semifinals, was really a bit of a shambles. And I thought, you know, I'll hold my hands up and say I thought that under Scaloni there really wasn't any future. But he just came in and said, no, you know, I'm not a tactical genius. I'm not going to win games on the chalkboard or the whiteboard like Guardiola does. But what I'm going to do is just put together my team, and I'm going to, you know, help them come together. And that's what's happened. It's just a team with this brilliant spirit and brilliant togetherness. You can see in every single...
You can see it.
They just love being together.
It's like crazy.
They're best friends. I keep making this this parallel. They're just like high school kids going on their summer trip or spring break or going on a lad's holiday and just having the time of their lives. And it's reflected on the pitch because there's no sense that, you know, these kind of meaningless friendlies are a drag. They're just a chance.
They're trying to play
themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
they celebrate a third goal against Jamaica last night as if it was the winning goal in the World Cup final.
Unbelievable.
And I think a lot of that, you know, has to go on Scaloni because he's picked the right players. He's given Messi the right role in this team, which is, you know, the father figure, but also this guy who's approachable. He can get involved with the fun and games. He's kept people like Otamendi and Alejandro Papu Gomez around who, you know, maybe aren't as good as they once were, but seem to bring that spark to the team and keep it all together. And they just do their thing. And I think probably you can point on the field, you can point to three or four players who've been crucial in this transformation, one in each position. In goal, of course, Emiliano Martinez. Just on the pitch and off it has just been so valuable to this Argentina.
And they haven't had a goalkeeper like that. I remember a former player here in Atlanta, an Argentine, you know, he referred to Debo. He's like, that's the personality of the goalkeeper that we need in Argentina. And this was after the Copa America in 2021, where he had that, you know, tremendous game against Colombia. But it was like, that is the attitude of the Argentine goalkeeper. So he's been massive.
Yeah, he has been absolutely fantastic. And I think everyone's praying that he stays fit and at least behaves himself a little bit for Qatar, because he's going to be so important. The next guy I'd say is Cristiano Romero in defence.
Yes.
He's just really dragged it together and made it a functioning unit almost for the first time. So I've been watching Argentina. In midfield, Rodrigo De Paul is just the link, the guy who takes the onus off Messi to be creating and scoring. And just runs at midfield.
Three lungs. I think he has three lungs. It's ridiculous. His stamina is crazy. Yeah.
That's incredible. And then Lautaro Martinez, who, unlike all of the strikers who have come before him, you know, even great guys like Agüero, like Higuain, he doesn't seem to feel the weight of the Argentina shirt.
Yeah.
He just goes in and does his thing and takes his chances. And I think only Messi scored more than him in the Scaloni era, And that's because he scored something like 9 goals in the last 3 games. Otherwise, it would have been Lautaro up top. Just as a partner for Messi, even you saw it all the way back in the 2019 Copa America. I don't think any of the strike partners Messi has had have played as well with him as Lautaro. And that's obviously huge. Right?
That's a big statement. I mean, because Gonzalo Higuain, you know, with all the troubles he had in the big moments, had great chemistry with Messi. You think Lautaro can go beyond that?
I think he can go beyond it because he's a slightly different type of striker to Higuain. Higuain was, of course, this classic number nine, you know, straight to goal and get it done. Lautaro can almost play as number 10. In fact, I was in Italy very recently in Milan, and I went to San Siro to watch Inter play Torino. And obviously, I was watching Lautaro very closely, and you know, this is a guy who I haven't seen in the flesh since he left Racing back in 2017, I think it was. Yeah. And I was just really impressed. He didn't score. He had a couple of chances, but his movement around the box, the way he just plays everyone in and kind of runs the show for an Inter team, which is really struggling.
Yeah.
It shows, again, how much he's grown as a player. And he's doing that for Argentina. And he's also in the box scoring goals and making goals. He laid on a very nice one for Julian Alvarez last night against Jamaica.
Yeah.
So that's why I would go out on a limb and say probably, you know, as a strike partner and definitely as a team, this is probably the best Messi has had in terms of just clicking and letting him just do his thing, which we know how good it is.
You mentioned Messi as a father figure, which is just crazy to think about, but it is the reality.
Old, right?
It does make me feel really old. Yes. Yeah. But it's the truth. It is the absolute truth. He is. In fact, it takes me back to what he said about Thiago Almada after the Honduras game. He mentioned, and I'll say it in Spanish first, you know, Thiago tiene mucha frescura. It was just an awesome quote. Like, it's so hard to translate too. I don't know. You know, I think what he means is that within this team of that's so together, so collective, you know, they're on the same mission. This kid comes in, this 21-year-old kid comes in and sort of just freshens the group, brings his own sort of energy. Perhaps that's something that you hear off in Argentina. I don't know. But it is interesting that Lionel Messi's role has changed in a bit tactically, you know, within the team as well. You know, how would you describe it? Every great player and every great sport, Jordan, LeBron, they all do it. They all sort of change how they play as they get older. What have you seen from Lionel Messi?
There's definitely been a change, especially with PSG and to probably a lesser extent, but even so in Argentina, you know, he's not playing in the penalty area that as much as possibly before. He's happy to come kind of go back to this withdrawn position, you know, 3/4 of the way down the field and just play the ball to his teammates, and it's working fantastically. The leadership thing I think is interesting as well, because there are a lot of question marks after that ill-fated 2018 World Cup when Mascherano stepped down, and the consensus around the Argentina team was that even though Messi had been the captain for a long time, at least wearing the armband, it was really Mascherano who remained the spiritual captain, took this team together, you know, gave them tore strips of them when they weren't playing well, encouraged them when they were playing good, and that replacing him would be difficult, especially with Messi, who didn't have that same kind of personality. And it hasn't happened like that. No. Messi obviously isn't a guy who's going to come in shouting or, you know, give these rousing team talks. If he says, you know, more than 4 words, yeah, you can consider yourself lucky. But he's a classic example of a guy who just leads by example. He is so dedicated to the national team. He would you know, if it was up to him, he'd never miss a game, even you know, a friendly played on, you know, midnight on a Tuesday night against the Cook Islands with nothing at stake. He'd want to be there, and he'd want to play the 90 minutes because it's just what he loves doing. He loves playing for Argentina, and he's so focused now. He's so desperate to win this World Cup. You can see it, and it's that enthusiasm, that will to win, which I think is just rubbing off on all his teammates. So even though, you know, he's not your archetypal get your shout at you and get your spirits up leader. He's a leader in another way, and it's worked brilliantly for Argentina.
And you just listen to his teammates after the game talk about Messi, and you can tell that that's exactly the role he has. You know, he doesn't have to say anything. He just shows up. He just plays. He's part of the group. You know, the hilarity between Papu Gomez and DePaul, like about the new nickname that Lionel Messi has, Comadre, whatever that means. But it's just funny how they sort of – it's like they do see Messi as like the elder statesman, you know, the guy in camp that has been there a long time. I also think that the shirt maybe this is subjective. Did it weigh on him in these other big tournaments? You know, I don't know, because he carried the team in so many big moments, you know, but like, it does really feel like when he puts on the jersey now, it really is like a superhero going to work. I mean, it almost like fuels him to a point where, you know, he looks like a different player than he is with PSG. Then he just like looks like almost like more sprightly, more active. Obviously he's happier now. So it is interesting. Do you think with all those pieces together, can Argentina do it? Like, can they do it in Qatar?
It's going to be so difficult. You know, to pull out the old cliches, a lot of great teams there. You got to win the seven games, or at least mostly the last four games to get through. And anything can happen. But I think if they go into the World Cup in the same vein as they've been playing for the last 3 years, you know, 35 unbeaten games it is now after this latest victory against Jamaica. There's no reason why they shouldn't be included in the discussion. I think the draw is favourable, especially if they can get that first place in the group. Then they avoid France and a repeat of that 2018 last 16. That'll be huge, you know, hit the ground running and win those opening games, which you have to win. I'm going to keep my enthusiasm in check, and I'm not going to predict anything more than that. I think this team has the talent and it has what it takes to get to the semifinals. After the semifinals, ask someone else. Anything can happen. But
sure.
I think that has to be the goal for Argentina, and it's one that they can achieve, I think.
All right, you're going to keep your enthusiasm in check, but I'm not going to let you off the hook, because when we get to the spot kick, you're going to have to deliver. You can't waffle. Before we get there, though, you know, you've been in Buenos Aires now. You mentioned offline 13 years, right? 13 years now?
13 years from September, yes.
Oh, my goodness. So what took you to Buenos Aires, and what have you learned about the footballing culture of Argentina since you've been there?
So essentially, it was a bit of luck, a bit of serendipity, which brought me here. I finished university back in 2009. And prior to that, I'd been talking, you know, trying to work out what I was going to do next. And by, you know, a chance meeting, I learned of an internship opportunity, working at an Argentine newspaper. I applied for it. May have overstated a little bit my Spanish language skills at that time, because they were very much less than fluent back then. But I got it. I came out, and it was supposed to be for
Who doesn't lie on their resume, though? Who doesn't?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, made for a rocky couple of first couple of months, but I got there, you know. The internship was for 6 months. Really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed living in Argentina. So I thought, let's see what happens. Let's stick it out for a while longer. I kind of pushed my return ticket back from February to June, and decided to try my luck, see if anything else came of it. And about a month before I was due to come back, I got the job with Gold working as the South American correspondent. So I came back to England for a while, still used that ticket, and announced to my family, yeah, I'm only staying for a while because I'm going to go back to Argentina. So, and yeah, from there, there's been a lot of ups and downs, you know, a couple of job changes, additions to the family. I became a father over here 3 years ago when Noel came along. Very happy there. You know, it's just changed my life being a father. Three World Cups, covering them, you know, on Argentina's behalf. And God, no, I can't even count how many Copas America it's been now. It's been a lot, including 2011, where I'm, you know, I was there on the ground. They got to every game. It's just been fantastic. And of course, as you said, learning about a new football culture. And to be honest, before I came out to Argentina, I've almost fallen out of love with football. You know, I watched the occasional game in England and enjoyed it every now and then, but it wasn't something that moved me particularly. But then I started going to games in Argentina and the atmosphere and the whole culture behind it is so entrancing. It just drags you in and you really can't get out. And I know you asked me about something I value about Argentine football culture, which of course is so flawed in many ways. You know, the presence of the barras, the ultras, and the violence, which erupts every now and then. You know, the poor administration of clubs, and, you know, financial state they're in, which of course is a reflection of Argentina as a whole. Its economy isn't doing well and generally doesn't do that well.
Yeah.
You know, it's got so many flaws, so many downsides, but I find kind of the respect that the everyday fan has for its club's history and football's history is so refreshing. There's no effort to rewrite the football history books as if, you know, it only began 30 years ago or 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, the games in the 50s and the 60s were just as important. You know, a club can say, yeah, you know, we won our first championship in 1952. You know, we deserve to be among the big boys. And, you know, you can sit around having a coffee in bars with these old guys who are just, you know, reel off name after name after name. Oh, you remember, I don't know, Pacho Fleitas from the 1981 Metropolitano. Oh, what a player he was. And yeah, it just goes from there. And, you know, as someone who graduated in history, has always loved history, it's just, you know, you live it here.
Yeah.
It's so relevant and everyone knows where they came from when they're referring to football. And of course, you know, the passion of fans, the colour. And as we've been talking about earlier, being able to be the first one to say, you know, I saw Diego Almada, I saw Lautaro Martinez, I saw these brilliant kids who come up and, you know, often from very humble backgrounds and just make it big and then go on, you know, to shoot for the stars and you're there for the very start of it. And that really is priceless.
Could you imagine? I mean, your son was he born in Argentina?
Mm-hmm. He was born in Argentina, yeah. In the
neighborhood national. Dual national. Yep. I mean, I would love to see an Argentine left-footed striker with the last name Edwards. That would be amazing.
He's right-footed, actually. I'm left-footed, but he's turned out right-footed. It was a setback.
What a disappointment. I know that happened with my son as well. As soon as I saw him kick with his right, I'm like, no.
It's tough.
It is tough. All right, Daniel Edwards, we're going to get to the spot kick now. Quickly, if you're on Twitter, follow Daniel Edwards at Dan Edwards Goal. It's a great follow. I mean, I love comedy and football is great. He's awesome with that. But also, if you're just interested or a fan of South American football, give Daniel Edwards a follow. Read his stuff. It's always good. Okay. Are you familiar with the spot kick?
No, this is new on me. I'm a little bit nervous.
Okay. So the spot kick are five questions. It's just like a penalty shootout. You have five chances to score. You can't waffle. It's A and B answers, pretty much. Okay. So that's how deliberate and determined you have to be. Just like you're stepping up to the spot, pick your corner and go. So let's get started. Question number one for Daniel Edwards on the spot kick. When will Argentina's winning streak end?
It will end in one of the group matches in Qatar.
Oh, my goodness. big answer. Do you want to go on the limb and name the foe who will take him down?
It's going to be someone silly like, Mexico or Poland are going to do it, but it's going to be the boost they need to bring it back together and keep going.
That's interesting. Interesting. I've been reading lately, there are Argentines that are like, maybe we should just lose now before we get to the World Cup.
They're very superstitious like that.
I know. All right. Good one. Question number two, who will be Argentina's next number 10?
I'm going to say, to keep you happy, Thiago Almada.
Oh, my goodness. You think he could inherit that shirt?
It's going to be a tough one to inherit, but he's definitely made the right noises to start with.
Unbelievable. That would be massive, massive, massive. All right, I shouldn't give this one away. Question number three for Daniel Edwards. Will Harry Maguire start versus Iran?
Oh, crap. I think he will. Yeah, I think Southgate will keep the faith and at least give him one chance at the World Cup.
Is that a good strategy? I think it is.
That wasn't the question.
It's true. True. I'll go out on a limb. I think if I'm the manager, I start him in that game rather than benching him for the game. If he performs well, he keeps going. If he doesn't have a good game, you have every right to sit him in the next group stage match. You're almost that. You're sort of given that right. Okay, question number three. The best Argentina Clásico. Oh, this is question number four. I apologize. Spot kick number four for Daniel Edwards. The best Argentina Clásico besides Boca River.
Absolutely no question about this. Racing against Independiente. Has to be.
Why?
Because I'm a Racing fan and it's very entertaining. it's between that and the Santa Fe derby between Rosario Central and Newell's. Yeah. Both are absolutely fantastic. And if you ever get the chance to go to either of them, do it.
I thought you would go with the Santa Fe derby. I think that's one that just me as a fan, I'm a little bit closer to. I don't know why my dad was just really into that one growing up.
Rosario derby, sorry. I missed
my Rosario.
Exactly. In Santa Fe
province. Yes, the Rosario derby. I think we got a lot of that when Tata Martino was here in Atlanta. I think a lot of fans learned about what Newell's was and what that rivalry is like with Rosario Central.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, the Racing Independiente is just is off the chain, off the chain. All right, final spot kick for Daniel Edwards, number five. Culturally, can Lionel Messi ever surpass Diego Maradona?
No.
Why not?
Because Maradona is Maradona. Diego. he is, you know, the symbol of Argentine football, the symbol, you know, almost of the Argentine working class, all of these guys who've pulled their way up from the slums and from the avishas to make a success of himself. He challenged authority. He got in everyone's face. He's just Maradona, a figure who is bigger than life. And I don't think Messi will make that even with a World Cup. And I don't think he wants to either. I don't think he would be interested in taking on that mantle. I think staying, you know, as Argentina's favourite footballer and leaving Diego up there as a favorite deity, the favorite god, would be a more than happy compromise for Messi.
Very interesting. I agree. I mean, Diego was everything to me as a child. Just talking offline with a producer, it's always going to be subjective. There's always going to be that question about who is the better player. You know, I think that depends really on so many things, but just like you mentioned, the way you described the symbol of Argentine football, I think there's only one. You're right. You're absolutely right. It's always going to be Diego. Always. Daniel Edwards, well done. You crushed it. You know, I think that's a 5 for 5.
Won the shootout. Oh, first Englishman to win a shootout.
You see? It can be done. Yeah. It can be done. An Englishman can be successful in a penalty shootout. Daniel Edwards, Argentina-based foreign correspondent. Thank you so much for coming on. This was great. I think a lot of fans are going to love this here in the States. and across, back from where you're from as well. I think Argentina is just becoming that brand and that country that a lot of people around the world are really interested in ahead of Qatar. So thanks again.
Cheers, Felipe.